Oh God, one more podcast?
Hello, hello everyone. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a very, very special episode of Desi Standard Time. I am one of the Mazas, Maza Lee. I have the other Maz, Khan, and a couple of other friendly faces, as you can see. So before I introduce them, let me just set up the premise a little bit. So as you guys know, season two leans heavily into the music scene in Pakistan and how it continues to affect media around the world. So today we are very, very lucky to have our three very, very talented musicians, Pakistanis, rather, you could say. We got two from Pakistan and, you know, one hanging out in the States to talk to us more about the topic. Two in the States, actually. I apologize. Yes. And we're super excited to chat with them. Welcome, Shah Jahan, Natasha, and Omran. I'm going to give you guys each the platform. Why don't you guys take a couple minutes just to introduce yourselves. Ladies first.
My name is Natasha Nurani. I am a musician. I am a music researcher. I'm a festival organizer. And I generally am doing things musical. So I run a festival called Lahore Music Meet with my friends Zara, Paracha, and Manize. I make music. I have an EP out, and I'm working on a new album. And
yay.
I run Peshkash, which is an archive for Pakistani music from 1947 to at least the 2000s. That's as much as we're considering for now. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know how you have time to do anything during your day.
I don't.
You shouldn't be doing something else right now.
Shah Jahan, what do you want to do? Natasha, we're super excited to have you. You're definitely multi-talented as hell. I mean, that's a lot of stuff on your plate. Shah Jahan, why don't you introduce yourself next?
Sure. Hey, I'm Shah Jahan Khan. I guess the way that I fit into this whole thing is because I co-founded the band The Gaminas. Also, an actor, a voiceover artist, and I also work in behavioral health consulting. So I work for a company that studies addiction and homelessness and prison reform. I act in theater and stuff out here. So
awesome. Great to have you. Yeah, super excited to hear more from you. And then last,
this was just an excuse for me to hang out with my friends.
Yeah.
And last but not least, we have Omran Shafiq. Why don't you, or Momo, as he's popularly called. So why don't you introduce yourself?
Momo. I said, Momo's a word that it's a name that followed me from college. I've never promoted it as like mine. I mean, I respond to it because like, oh, there's no other Momo in the room. It's me that they're addressing. It's not something that I've ever, but it's followed me throughout the world, wherever I go. So I've accepted it. I've changed my LinkedIn profile to like Omran Momo Shafiq. It was always like Omran Shafiq. I want to sound professional, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I give up. It's like every article is Omran, you know, quotations, Momo Shafiq. I'm like, it's Momo now.
We have a cat named Momo. Did you know
that? Really? There's
That's offensive.
It means peach, apparently, in Japanese. It's a big term. And in Italian as well. And Pakistanis tend to use it.
Omran, I think you should 100% start a show called Momos with Momo, and basically you have guests.
Momos with Momo.
Oh, there you go.
I would watch that.
You eat Momos and you talk. You know,
I eat Momos. I just talk about myself all day long. That's what I should do. So yeah. I'm Omran Shafiq. I'm a guitar player, musician, erstwhile composer, and whatever I can get my hand, whatever I can be a part of. Someone lets me be a part of something, I'll be like, hey, good. I'm glad to be a part of this podcast. You guys call me on, I'll come, you know?
That's
so
awesome.
That's what I do. That's where I fit.
So glad to have
make myself.
So glad to have you here. So glad to have everyone here.
Thanks.
This season, we've been talking a lot about, so it's all about Pakistan, Pakistani media, and how it affects different people around the globe, how it affects different forms of media. We've seen it basically inspire or influence everything from Bollywood all the way over to American cinema and American music. So this season, we've leaned heavily on Pakistani music. We've talked about Coke Studio. We've talked about Pakistani rock. We've talked about Qawwali. And I think this is just a great, great group of guests to kind of talk us through the different scenes and different influences that have led to where we currently are in Pakistani music. And it's an exciting time, I would say. Natasha, I want to start with you because, you know, you've kind of given us some background. You're definitely a very talented creator. You're a singer-songwriter. You've done playback. You've done all kinds of stuff, but you also seem to be curating a lot of music. And I really want to start with the Lahore Music Meet, which you mentioned you're a co-founder for, and I think it's now going to be in its sixth year, if I'm not mistaken. I know that COVID, it might be, you know, a little like everything's playing, all the plans are kind of up in the air, but man, that's incredible. And so why don't you tell us a little bit more about that and what that really means for emerging artists and people that you've kind of featured through that show?
Sure. So this was co-founded with Zara Paracha, who's in a band with me called Biryani Brothers as well. So she is an absolute baller who would not be possible with us.
This group gets the award for best band names ever.
Man, seriously. You guys win. You put us to shame.
But yeah, so we co-founded this in our last semester at college, like in our last year at during our undergrad. And I think that was the only time we could have managed to do it because we didn't realize how disillusioned we'd be once we graduated. So we got it started and we got it off the ground. And the point of it was, while it wasn't a new concept to have a festival, but it was a new concept to have a music festival that was truly accessible, not only on an audience level, but on a musician level, because you had all of these lovely corporate shows that were happening, but they were curated for a specific musical style or a specific thing. So there were no longer any TV channels or anything promoting up and coming music. Like I discovered Maj on Indus Music because they had this like weird video with Jai on, you know, and things like that. And it was weird. Like for that time, that music was not what you'd commonly hear. So we wanted to kind of serve as that space. We wanted to be the space where people could come and discover new artists. We wanted to be a space where people could find like-minded people who were obsessed with music in a way that me and Zara are as well, or could get lessons. There's nowhere, especially 5 years ago, like there was nowhere we could go on a local level to understand what was happening musically. So we ended up creating the space, which started off with maybe 2,000, 3,000 people in attendance the first year. This year we had 20,000 people over the course of 2 days, oh, wow, which was wild.
Wow.
So we didn't do any
advertising other than social media.
LMM was some of the best times I've had in Lahore, just because it's so relaxed. There's so many people that you know. It's, I mean, for me, just hanging out, seeing like Sajjad Ali walking around or anybody, just kind of, and it's like, holy crap. And everyone just can go up to some of these guys and just start talking, you know? I mean, as a fan, I was loving it. I love playing there. Obviously, that was such a great experience.
Amazing. For me, man. It was that so was a fun moment. At some point, Momo dedicated a song to me and Zara.
I did.
We were just crying. We're like,
it was really sweet, man. And I had a blast. I was that's like after 10 years, Maj played a show at the insistence of these guys. They literally forced it.
For like a couple of years.
They forced it. Yeah, they were like, listen, you have to do it. I'm like, you know, I'm a band. I got some stuff happening. And, you know, and they were like, no, this has to happen. And then it happened. They made it happen. They made it happen.
Imran just wanted to make sure that you had 20,000 guests before he brought himself.
I wish it was me that caused that.
But I was glad that audience was there. People were like, oh my God, this band, this song, what's happening? It was like, the best kind of throwback Thursday moment at LMM, but happening right there in front of you. So the point of the festival is to create a space that is, again, open, accessible to all. So we don't charge tickets. It's free to everybody. Love there it. Is a, wow. no business model. It's terrible. We make no money off of it.
Wow.
Very important to note.
This beautiful. Yeah. Everyone should know. But it's turned into this beautiful kind of space where lots of communities have, like sub-communities have had to come together, because there's usually a lot of, like what Zara and I had faced was we were young musicians trying to get into the scene. We had no way to get there. And I, for example, it's kind of selfish in a way as well to kind of curate a festival and create a space where, you know, one day we might find ourselves in a similar situation as artists. But I think we've managed successfully to create that as from a festival sense of the word.
Yeah,
I think unfortunately, sorry, but that's kind of what you have to do in Pakistan sometimes as well. Yeah. Is that you have, because no one's got, there's no like setback. You can't go, you do this and then you get signed up to like a music school or do something like that. You really just have to make your own space, like your own, how do I get,
right,
you know, find something where I can perform and be known, and
there's
and
they no literally curriculum.
You kind of make your own situation.
This is kind of where Pakistan is right now, and you know, we're talking about music specifically, but if you even look at tech or anything else, really, Pakistan is kind of lagged behind a lot of its neighboring countries, you know, like India or, you know, other areas of the world. And now all of a sudden people are kind of realizing, why wait? Let's just create. And we're seeing a lot of this kind of trend, and it's great to see it, especially in the arts. Right?
You know, so, I mean, I remember it's happened with Nuri. Nuri kind of started that, in my opinion.
Right,
they kind
of,
in Pakistan, they were like...
guest appearance.
Hey.
Daughters. Stealing my phone because I've stolen her iPad.
I love that. I love just the... I'm
using her iPad, so she's
casual.
Like...
She knew. She knew that while he's talking.
And like informal that was, like whatever, dad, just like walking
by. I get that all the time. Like, stop embarrassing me, dad. Stop talking to me. Usually it's like whatever. She's 9 now, so it's yeah, that's what I get. It doesn't bother me. So anyways, what was I saying? Nuri started the whole do it yourself thing, where they were like, you know, you want to do something, just do it yourself. And Ali Nur was always a big component of that, and I was gonna give him props for that, because you know, I remember hearing the first Nuri album. I was in America and we were working on the mod stuff. And I was like, you know, it's so good to hear Pakistan, like fun Pakistani, like rock and roll done well without, you know, pretension or like being too heavy or anything. And, you know, they're doing it themselves. He makes his own videos. He gets, you know, his own guys on here. All his friends are like in all the videos. They're all in all the guys that he actually hangs out with. There's no like fake stuff happening with that. I love that about the Nuri stuff. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. It was a good impetus to get that started.
For sure.
Oh, 100%. And Natasha, you actually talked about the festival and you know how this is like a very passionate endeavor for you, but I want to talk a little bit more about your own artistry. I was actually listening to your EP Munasib, which is incredible and has so many incredible sounds and feels, actually, you know, from contemporary R&B to neo soul, to even just a lot, and progressive rock as well. Actually, that was the word I was looking for.
Progressive
rock, man. But you know. But you, what would you describe your sound as?
I mean, it's an interesting question. Someone else asked me this the other day. The EP came out in 2018.
18.
Yeah, I think 18. Yeah, even I've forgotten.
Let me tell you.
It's been a while. It's been a minute. So I feel like the sound for that EP was really just, again, a culmination of what I was listening to at that point. But also, like, I have been performing since I was 14, very seriously, like taking music a lot more seriously since my early 20s. It's hard to do when you're also getting a college degree and trying to make sure you're sorted on all fronts so you're not jobless in like 5 years. So I did all the things by the book. So at this point, I think this was my way of also being like, okay, I'm not just a singer. Like a thing that happens in Pakistan especially is that you get kind of boxed into, okay, you can A, only do this type of song, or sound, or and B, this is it. We will give you everything. You just come and do a singing, you know. Like that's something that I was kind of getting annoyed at, and I dealt with that for a while. So this was kind of like, okay, I'm going to put all my influences and jam pack it into these 5 songs. All of everything has to come out. So it is a mix of all the genres I have grown up listening to and have been influenced by. I have always been a huge Tool and Maynard fan. Like he is the best
ustad.
so you know, like I guess that married with lots of my like R&B influences, that's what the album was. But now I guess my sound is also changing because I'm writing in Urdu, so my like the language is different. It's been 2 years. I would hope that my sound would evolve, but also I've been working more so on commercial projects. So me and Momo also got to work on an OST for a film that came out a couple of years ago, which was life-changing, just working, just being in Omran studio, not just visiting, right? Like him miking you, it's like, great, this is what an honor for it. Like genuinely. And so I did a Nahid Akhtar song for a film called Baji a few years ago with Jamal Rahman. And so that was really challenging for my voice because I'm used to singing, you know, Western music, Western rock music. That's kind of the tone I developed over the years of amateur performance. And to unlearn that and start learning khayal gaiki and start listening to more like older, like I've been listening to lots of Punjabi music all my life, but to listen to older Punjabi music with the intent of singing it for commercial projects and just doing lots of jingles and VOs that I'm not personally invested in, but require something of my voice. So I feel like that has all played into how I want to approach my music or just my musicality. Of every album or every body of work, I feel I would want it to always sound different or touch upon a different genre.
Right, right. I'm actually curious on that to expand a little bit more, because I believe there's a movie called The Arrival, or but basically it expands on extraterrestrial life that arrives to Earth, and Arrival. They basically Arrival, right? Yeah, and they're talking about how knowing a certain type of language also changes the way you think. So when you're songwriting and you're actually going, you know, transitioning from like English to Urdu, has that happened, or is there any, you know, any level that you can expand on that?
I mean, it definitely has. I think the themes I'm able to speak about with Urdu, because with English, it seems like it's now starting to seem to me personally in my music a little more inauthentic because I am not able to voice a lot of my feelings. Because, you know, like how they say, what language do you birth in, or what language do you start speaking in when you're angry?
What language do you dream in, or think in? Yeah.
Dream in, yeah.
And so I guess I've just grabbed it. Like, so I will still continue to write in both English and Urdu because English serves a different purpose.
Wait, so what makes you feel unauthentic? English or Urdu?
English. Yeah, now really? Even though, again, I'm a burger kid from Pakistan, private school situation. My Urdu is not, like, it's not like I'm writing poetry either. I'm not trying to do that. I'm self-aware as well, guys. I know it.
But I think that's interesting that you have that preference and you're cognizant of it, because, you know, there's a lot of people even living in America who have very similar kind of issues.
It's actually the opposite for me. That's why I was surprised.
Yeah.
Because I find I'm an English major. I dream in English. I remember there was a time when my mom, when I was in high school, she woke me up like really early in the morning, and she was really upset, visibly upset. And I was like, what's wrong? And she's like, I heard you were dreaming and you were speaking in English. And so you do everything in English now. And I was like, that's not my fault. You sent me to an American school. And now guess what? I dream in American.
Yeah. Don't turn this around, Mom. Come on.
Yeah, that's not my fault. This is your fault. Thank you for giving me such a good education, but no, your fault.
But it's crazy because there's a lot of dual identities for everyone.
Always exists. Because anyone who's Pakistani, or like anyone who's like, you know, grown up in the West, who's not from, you know, originally from the West, whatever that means, but we'll find that, you know, that sometimes, what are you thinking is the big thing. And I realized that day, I was like, oh, so I'm pretty much a coconut, you know, I'm brown on the outside, I'm white on the inside.
I mean, this also, like, it's a recent thing for me, though, Momo. Like, that's the thing. It's not something that I've grown up with. While, like, I completely understand what you mean. Like, I've never tried writing in Urdu before, especially as a youth, because I was like, no, this is just going to sound like some...
It was frustrating for me.
...burger situation.
It always is frustrating for me. It's frustrating to try to write in Urdu, express myself.
Exactly. I think for me, because all of the work I was doing with Peshkash and my master's dissertation all took me back to music from 47 to 2000. So, because and I didn't realize how much of, like, at least 90s and 2000s music that I grew up listening to wasn't, like, Abrar ul Haq was always coming out with bangers, and those were all Punjabi. You know, even Nuri had some, like, interesting Punjabi elements and things like that. Even you guys were in Urdu. You know, so, like, I think I just this has been a recent shift, and it's been great because the themes I'm able to touch upon in Urdu are a lot... are different from the ones I can touch upon in English. Like, and also I guess the fear that I have now with English is I feel like it just sounds a bit repetitive, or it'll sound exactly like what my influence is. You know what I mean? Like, it just sounds derivative. Agreed. And why, even if it doesn't, it's just something that is irking me. So I think shifting to Urdu has definitely switched my writing process up entirely in terms of arrangement, in terms of the pockets I'm finding, in terms of where I'm placing things. Even in production a little bit. And I think secondly, it's it's just it's allowed me to explore more themes than what I was, or different themes, not more. Oh. I won't say that, but different themes than I was in English.
Right, so, right.
That's, I feel so like that's... I noticed a switch. So I when I'm not a lyric writer, so that's one thing. But in terms of like the thinking thing you guys were saying, I lived in living in Pakistan for like a year. I feel like around month three, I would wake up, and then in my head I would be like, and then I would start, you know, the thoughts.
Would
you... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I just found that. Yeah, I found that really interesting what you were saying.
You definitely start cursing in Urdu. Let me tell you that. That's the first thing. Nothing is more fun than looking at someone.
You're being driving, like, especially when you're driving. You're like this.
Yeah. Tamina.
There's no better words. No better words. Yeah. And when you translate them, they're even funnier. That's a really interesting point though, Natasha, and I'm really glad you brought it up, Maz.
Yeah.
And asked about it, because linguistically it's something that we don't even talk about, but as a, you know, as third culture kids, or as people who've basically grown up in like a weird culture, small Pakistani household where they only speak Urdu and watch Pakistani television dramas and subject you to Geo News 24/7, we like grew up speaking Urdu only, and then like kids in school are like, why is this kid weird and his English so like shitty? So something we've all experienced, but speaking, you know, having a voice, I think, is a big reason why musicians, you know, make music in the first place. Shah Jahan, I wanted to ask you, I think that's a great segue into Gaminas, because I think that you guys started around 2005 at a time when really, you know, I was like a very young kid.
I was a junior in high school. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a junior, like I think same. So I was like either a sophomore or junior in high school. And this is basically after 9/11 had happened and Islamophobia was kind of reaching peak levels in the United States. And as someone, I'm sure Mazali, I'm sure Shah Jahan, if you were here in the States, you can kind of relate. You know, we were getting it from all sides. And I kind of see that embodied in some of your music. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you guys got started and what are some of the themes that, you know, kind of you try to evoke in those early years and even now?
Yeah, I mean, I think with us, it was interesting because so... While I would say the thing that we fortunately or unfortunately are most well known for is the like Muslim punk label, because people love to label you.
What was it called?
Yeah, that's just how it is.
Yeah. But it's, we were always, so for example, like we weren't even, we always had, for most of the band's career, there have been technically it was started by, I guess you could argue, two American Pakistani guys, but they've always been non-Pakistani guys in the band. There's always been non-Muslims in the band. We did, yes, write, you know, the stuff you write about is what's happening, you know, around you and stuff. But we, you know, like the third song on the first album is about a Bollywood style train robbery, you know? So like there was always other stuff.
So tight.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically. Yeah. So, I mean, we were always drawing on lots of different influences. I think that the Islam related stuff also being, you know, quote unquote, American Muslims or whatever. We also spent a lot of time with the 5%er community, with all sorts of different people. So we were like trying to get it on all sorts of different ends there. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's been almost 15 years. I think that
dude, you guys started a movement, in my opinion. I mean, there's so documentaries, too. There's movies.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
the cool part for me, though, is I remember actually around the time Natasha and I first met, I think only a few years ago, full disclosure, I was friends with Natasha's brother while he was here. So that's kind of that's how we knew each other. But that trip that I took in 2017 was my first trip after 10 years and after having lived there for a year and stuff. And that was... I still sort of thought we were like a weird little band that nobody really knew about in Pakistan. And I was pleasantly surprised, to be perfectly honest with you, that like, so, and I'm not, obviously the folks that are, you know, we did some songs in Punjabi and stuff too, but folks that I would say have access to that kind of music. Like I was really like blown away that like so many people like knew about us and stuff. So that part was definitely like a pleasant surprise. Did I answer your question? I totally forgot.
You did. You did. I mean, yeah, no, you did. And really, you know, what I'm trying to get at is what kind of music are you trying to create, or have you already created? What are you kind of trying to put out there? And I do want to touch on...
like Natasha, I mean, we're always trying to, you know, I think evolve. It's been 15 years, so it's kind of crazy. We're like, we've been around and we've done the DIY. That's our thing. Is like, we're not a mainstream commercial. That's none of us are making a living from this here in the US. You know what I mean? We've been blessed to get to tour all over the world and stuff in our kind of way. Like, we've done that. Like, we haven't done any major touring in a few years. I think according to our text group chat, I think we're going to be recording new music next month at Bossom's house.
Oh, nice.
I'm 100% sure. Because we're not sure about the whole coronavirus and going to a studio situation right now. We also are sitting on like lots of music we haven't put out because we can't fucking agree on shit half the time. Just like any other band.
Oh, artists.
So, yeah. No, but one thing I think I did want to say was that I feel very fortunate to be... one of those. Now, you were saying, MK, that you grew up only speaking Urdu and stuff, and I think that that wasn't the case for us, but one thing that happened a lot in our community here is that there's a lot of kids that grow up here and just think of Pakistan as some weird place, you know, that their parents are and they have no personal connection to it.
Yeah,
right. I feel extremely fortunate to have spent a year there, you know, and like build some of these relationships. Now to the point where like when we just went to Pakistan in January when I was crashing at Momo's while I was dying of sickness for like the 4 days that I was there. But
Corona?
Like, well, no. I mean, no, it was Aunties Jannah.
That's just normal Pakistan.
Yeah. It was, I went to go
normal Pakistan.
Oh, so you had the pani puri. Got it.
Basically,
yeah. Visit Pakistan.
Yeah, but I mean, what I was trying to say was just like,
you don't eat the ras malai on day one. Come on, Yash.
But yeah, just that, like, you know, to have that, like now I go there with my mom, and I know like there's the family shit I do, but then like I know where to get batura and you know all sorts of stuff on, you know, and so stuff that like will impress my mom that like, you know, hey, like you really have built a relationship with this place that is independent of your family. And that's,
I think it should be mandatory, you know, like there's like mandatory military service. If you're Pakistani, you should spend a year in Pakistan. Connect with your roots, wherever you're living.
Yeah, because I think there's nothing more unfortunate than talking to like whatever privileged Desi kids here who just fucking don't, you know, and it's half the time it's not always their fault. I don't want
to, you're saying I can't drive my 5 series there,
or whatever, but like it's you know, they didn't grow up speaking Urdu, or they didn't all their family is here, whereas most of my family is actually still in Pakistan. So that's why I've, you know, kept in touch with people like and just tried to be involved with the scene, whatever's going on, even from like a distance, just to feel like I belong to it in a way.
Yeah,
that part's really cool.
So I was going to say, actually, I'm going to turn that around on you. I think one of the ways that a lot of people in the US can actually connect with their culture back home is when they see something or they hear something that is similar to what they're kind of growing up on, but maybe in a different language or from a Pakistani rock band. And I think that Umran kind of touched on it, like you guys really did start something and we're seeing it now. I mean, we're seeing it in Bollywood. We're seeing it all over the world where we're seeing it in Latin America. It's gotten crazy now to the point where a lot of different genres of music, a lot of different cultures are coming together. And it's like, people are like, whoa, like people around the world will still like this, even though it's not in their language. What a crazy idea. Yeah. And
I think no matter where you're from, you should own your culture. Right. And
exactly.
Yeah. And sure. If you're into the Sex Pistols, take that, but add your own variation on that. I mean, so it's the ethos. It's you capture, you understand, okay, where are these guys coming from, and then how does that, every culture has revolutionaries, you know, every culture has anti-establishment, every culture has the establishment, every culture has, you know, and then okay, so where do I stand on this ladder of whatever it is that we're doing? How does that relate to whatever it is that I really enjoy creating culture, you know, from a part of the culture that I grew up, maybe in the West. I grew up listening to heavy metal and rock and roll and all that. So how do I, but you know, for me, Urdu, playing heavy metal with Urdu vocals just sound terrible. I don't think you should do it. It doesn't make sense. Punjabi, I can imagine. Heavy metal, Punjabi stuff totally makes sense. But so, aggressive, like Urdu mein aggressive hona bada ajeeb sa lagta.
I have a friend who is
Punjabi,
actually,
you can be aggressive and just be like, senu ki pata, you can be like, you know,
I have a friend who's actually like a Punjabi rapper. And I went to his place one time. Yeah. And I went to his place one day. He was listening to German rock And I was like, this is cool. All right. Like, just casually, as he was like vacuuming the house, he's like, I love this language. He's like, listening to German made me realize why I love Punjabi. He's like, it's the fact that it's just like,
it's aggressive. You can do chilled out West Coast rapping with Urdu.
This is where I'm gonna disagree. And maybe
Urdu metal works.
It seems like I'm in a room full of.
I think it sounds like, beautiful.
I'm sure I'm in a room full of Lahori, so everyone's gonna be like, "This is blasphemy." But Punjabi just doesn't do it for me all the time. And hearing Urdu is amazing to me. And like, for example, when you guys did that cover of Choli Ke Piche, which is Hindi or whatever.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I was like, this is a version of the song that I would never have heard.
Because that was kind of dirty. I wanted to ask Natasha
about in terms of the like one thing I've always wondered about and the like Urdu supremacy aspect of stuff and just like how there's so many different languages. Like one thing that it reminds me of right away was the thing, I don't know if he's still doing it, but Hamza and Sikandar were doing that Baradari broadcast thing.
Try
to explore. So I'm just curious, as somebody that works kind of on the ground a lot, like do you try to, I know that there's I'm probably behind myself and that there's other festivals like Lahuti and stuff maybe that try to incorporate all these other aspects of what it means to be Pakistani. And I know
they do,
for me,
you
know, growing up and having this one very narrow idea of like what is they seen as, what is Pakistani now. So I'm just curious, like, what do you like, you know, what do you see in terms of access for other communities too?
I mean, it's still, although there are efforts from a lot of different like festivals and like shows and all of these things to try it, unfortunately, we're still not being able to get part of, like, past the point of like kind of the tokenization and the fetishization of like, whether it's Sindhi language music, whether it's Baloch music, you know, they still have to dress up in their, you know, full garb. They can't find, you know, it's less, although I, again, like coming back to rap in a way, I feel like that is one genre that has transcended all.
You got Balochi rappers. So you have the guys from Layari doing it.
There's some Pashtun rappers. Oh my God. Because in Pashto music, everything is in seven and in weird times and everything. So it's just like this prog rap happening, which is amazing.
Prog rap. Right? That's awesome.
It's amazing. It's Pashto prog rap. That is how I would have it. But I think the problem is that, again, with all of these festivals, they either happen once a year, once a month, you know, like it's infrequent, and also access to them is a lot harder because that's also a problem because most of the people you're getting access to are semi-elite kids who can afford to make their own music videos, to hire a producer, to even, you know, have a MacBook or a decent enough laptop to download Ableton or whatever, you know, like, so there's money that goes into it. And there isn't enough of an infrastructure to be, although there are these, like, there are, like, packed with small studios, like, all of these rural areas, whether you're in Sindh or Punjab or KPK, there are studios, especially because you have commercial work happening. But in terms of them getting access to the mainstream, like if rich indie kids can't get access to the mainstream enough to get to the diaspora.
Yeah, but in Pakistan, I feel there is no mainstream anymore. You know, you just listen to what you like.
Yeah.
What is mainstream in Pakistan anymore? I don't think pehle to ek channel hota tha, ek radio station hota tha, and you'd only get whatever was playing on it. So your goal was just to get on that. Now, I guess mainstream is something like Coke Studio, but even that, I don't think is, you know, it's not for everybody.
Absolutely. I think for me, mainstream and indie are two like very like two words that mean nothing anymore. And I totally agree with that. But I guess what that means is that mainstream for me is literally being able to come on TV and access that amount of people. Like that, I think literally that's the benchmark, because at some point it was coming on Indus Music, at some point it was coming on Coke Studio. Even that has slowly, you know, like,
that's
like regressed a little bit in terms of like the value it holds for a musician to make it. So I think if you're getting playability on TV, that is on a local level, because that is really truly where you're getting the eyeballs when it comes to this.
And so mainstream also implies mainstream also does imply that there are other channels or other form avenues that you're able to listen to that may be less well known, but they're out there. And that, I think that's good.
I remember reminds me.
But Momo is right, saying that there is no mainstream because none of your artists are signed on to a label. All of them bump their own money into it. It's just that some artists have amassed enough money from their 90s and 2000s careers to be able to keep doing it. while everyone who started post 2010 is forever struggling with their like paycheck to paycheck life. So yeah, sorry, Ashaja, I cut you off.
Oh no, I was thinking that reminded me of, so this is now back in, I'm like older than you, obviously, but back
in 2000. Let's not talk about
it. You have to say it like that.
I know. I was in,
met the one at Bapu. I was like,
it could be all of your kids.
Unnecessary.
My bandmate Bassam and I had moved to Lahore in 2008. And that was like, that was the year, you know, where whatever, you know, finding myself, seeing if I can make it and, you know, doing creative stuff in Pakistan and just, and again, wanting to establish this connection. And one of the more kind of highlights of that year, it was a tough year for a lot of different reasons, was, you know, people, you know, us going over there, not as the band Kaminas, but a different band, and trying to put Punjabi and punk music together. And most people, most of those like elite kids were like, you know, this is never going to fucking work here. Like the common quote unquote, whatever, the common person is not going to get into this. And although we only, you know, managed to do a couple of these, we did these DIY shows with like a generator and our own sound and lights and shit. And I'll never forget one of the most like epic gigs we ever did was by ourselves on in the heart of the old city, at this place, not next to Gugu's, called Hotel Fort View. I don't know if it's still there.
That's in the documentary, right?
Yeah. And we just basically, we did like the way you would do it in the US. We just like drew up a bunch of flyers, photocopied them, and just walked around and invited literally random people on the street to come see the show. And they lost their shit. And we literally, we only had like five songs. We just played the same five songs like three times, and the power, you know, the generator went out during it. But it was just like, it was, and they loved it. And it wasn't
your Kanye West Jay-Z moment.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah, but there wasn't any pretension of like, oh, you know, like we sort of broke the class barrier too a little bit and stuff. And that, even though it was just this like one,
that's a big thing, man. That's a big thing in Pakistan, because it everything is separated by that class. Yeah. You know, when Abral Haq plays, you see a different crowd. And there's that's the masses, right? That's the mainstream. Mm-hmm. You see that and you're like, oh, these are the guys that you know, this is the guy that everyone listens to,
right.
And that's the rickshawala, that's the thing. And you know, we, you know, I love Abrar, you know, but it was always kind of like, you know, it's Abrar, it's just funny, and you know, but these guys love him, like he's a superstar, right?
Yeah, also, I didn't know LMM like was firehouse. That's really cool.
Yeah, unfortunately for us, but yes.
Start charging.
Yeah,
20,000 people. They could have support the arts. Just say, you know, support the arts
as is. So like, I'm reluctant, but we'll figure something out.
You're just happy they're showing up.
Yeah, as an American, just put a box out. They'll put money in it. Trust.
No,
they'll steal the box, Stuart. They'll steal the box. What are you talking about?
As a Pakistani, how much steal the box?
There's how much in there right now? It's coming with us.
I just wanted to say on the Abrar front, like, so I grew up in Pakistan like my entire life. I've lived here. In the 90s and early 2000s, like my early, I'm like a 92 baby, so like my memories aren't super fresh. But like from what I remember, is that there used to be gigs like Basant was a huge thing, and Basant was a huge thing for the music scene. That month of February when you'd be having gigs anyway because the weather is good, people in Lahore would just gather at different places like the Lahore Fort, etc., and you'd have like crazy mega lineups, and you'd be gig hopping with your family nonetheless, right? So like it would be my entire family cramped in a car going to Andhroon Sher, making sure that we caught like the Abrar show and this show and that show. So there was a Pakistani music scene that existed where, again, different classes could, like, there was that option. Now, and if you're seeing Atif Aslam, that'll cost you, like, 10,000 rupees, 8,000 rupees, 5,000 rupees, Abda Parveen, all of these, like, major artists will cost you that much money, right? So like, really, how do you gather? No. I am Atif Aslam stan for life, you know? Like, as someone is as diverse as a musician as him, like, I'm like, obsessed. But
yeah, man, he's no joke. He's great.
Yeah.
No joke, dude.
No one here doesn't like Atif. No one here doesn't.
Never heard of him.
No, I know. But
we'll get crucified if we actually say that. Honestly deserves it.
Why some people get, like, there is a reason to be resentful also of the fact that there's such a huge dichotomy in how much the 1% will get paid and how much the rest of the musicians will get paid. That is very valid. I feel like Atif is one of those people who just broke and transcended social and like social political like class boundaries and every, like, he just won everything. Like, someone needs to.
I'll
write
be honest. I poo pooed him initially when I heard him. I was like, look at this guy. This,
really?
Well, you know, he was like an overnight sensation type. You know, young. And we're like, where's this guy coming?
Whatever.
Getting off thinking
welcome,
he's like
welcome
all
to the Atif Aslam show.
All, you know, I know all the girls are.
I hate him now too, man. Yeah, you're
this
right.
This is the Atif Aslam appreciation hour.
But then I met him, and then I've heard him, and then I've seen how he's developed. He's cultivated, and he's worked hard at it, and he comes with it every time. Yeah. Every time I've ever played with him on Coke Studio, he's impressed me from the last time that I saw him. So I'm like, wow, the guy's not just resting on his laurels. He's not just ghosting at any point. He gives it 100%. He comes in prepared. More prepared than most other artists that I've worked with, and I've just about worked with all of them.
Yeah, and Imran, that's
in,
actually
knocked out of the park within like one take, and we're like looking at each other. Do we need to do another take? And that happens with nobody. That happens with nobody because you're like, okay, one take. All right, let's do another take. All right, well, that was all right. Maybe we can, you know, figure this out. Let's do it.
Yeah, unless you're
everyone's like talking about it, and I was like, okay, well, that was really good. Do we need to do it again? And they're like, just do it again, just to be safe. Let's just do it again. Like Taj Dare Haram, I remember that's like one of the biggest songs that Coke Studios ever had.
He came
in, knocked it out of the park the first time, and that's not an easy song to do.
It's
honestly,
only
that's
Atif
not a, that's a,
and like,
all of us were like in pain doing that song because it's a hard song. Rahat is a different class and maybe a different. category
so,
as well.
And Eddie Van Halen what beat it.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
But I know RIP, man. But yeah, no, that's a perfect Eddie, that's a perfect that segue. Because you're already talking about it's sad. But yeah, I mean, you've obviously, Imran, you've worked on Coke Studio and not only just with Atif Aslam, but with several other like talented artists. So expand
like
a little bit more about that.
I don't
pretty much everyone. Yeah. Yeah. So you've been there since the Genesis. But yeah, tell us the experience about working with everybody at Coke Studio, what it's like, and you know, the process.
It's awesome. So Natasha's seen some of it. It's about as professional and solid, as far as like a musical program goes. I mean, you can't get any better than that in Pakistan. So I was really lucky to have seen it, you know. And then the first season was so different, and then it kept changing, and then eventually it became like this thing. We had no expectations of it, you know,
it's
sticking around. We thought it was like one and done, you know.
It's a phenomenon.
In the first season.
We do a whole episode just talking about how Coke Studio evolved from like this basically like this like a little sideshow that Coke was sponsoring. It's like, oh, this might be something, and then turned into this incredible space.
Juggernaut. Yeah,
it's literally turning you know, people into celebrities overnight. It's literally giving a showcase of both old and new artists. I mean, I think the first memory a lot of us have of that kind of thing happening was when Rahat and Momina both did that rendition of Afreen Afreen, and we were just like, we all know who Rahat is. Who is Momina? We all know this song. What is this new verse? And all of a sudden, like, people who are in the US really kind of got exposed to this crazy concept and this crazy show that was putting together these age-old or really experienced musicians that had a lot of a big following with relative unknowns, at least in the US, and with great composition, excellent musicians in the background, excellent vocalizations. I mean, it was incredible to see something like that coming out of Pakistan, as sad as that is to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a double-edged sword, you know. It took over the whole industry. Well, partly because there was such a huge vacuum all of a sudden. All the record labels, all the TV channels started, you know, folding in on each other. The few record labels that were there were just, they're dying out. So the only place, again, you know, it's like, where can we consume some of the music that's out there? The record labels were failing us. The TV stations were pretty much failing us. So it became, and it kind of fell into Coke Studios' lap, I guess, to be able to do it. And, you know, I mean, with all due credit to Rahel, though, I mean, he's the guy who kind of did the visionary aspect of it, where it's like, you know, where we can, he realized that it could be more than just a music show, that it could be, you know, like a big cultural touchstone. And he kind of went for that. And you know, it could have, and, you know, and then it maybe becomes too big for its own good a little bit. At one point, you know, I think it did. It's so hard to maneuver in Coke Studio. It's so hard to, like, change it up. It's so hard to, so it's, you know, it's become its tagline, and it can't really be anything else. So it makes it difficult for allowing maybe an artist who's not your typical Pakistani artist to kind of make a mark, because it's Coke Studio. You have to do the Coke Studio thing, you know, and then make it to Vienna or whatever. So it's been hard to navigate, which has been good in the sense that it allows other music shows. I think I can throw in Nescafe as a good alternative to Coke Studio for people who maybe would like something else. And then, but here's the gauntlet was thrown. It was like, here's the challenge, right? If you don't like the way Coke Studio's coming out, if you don't like the way it's doing it, do something better. Make something better. You know, make your own mark. You know, and again, it. I think that's the best part about Pakistani music. I think the reason Pakistani music has been able to make a mark has been because it's rough. And it comes from the heart, because, you know, no one's in it for the fame and the fortune, because there really isn't that much of a fortune, and yeah. Fame doesn't keep the lights on, right? So you look at it, if anyone's doing music in Pakistan, it's because they freaking love it. They love it. And it's some sort of compulsion, right? It's not like, you know, I'm gonna get rich and famous or you know. So yeah, you're like, keep your day job and then, you know, spend all night working on music. That's that's a hard thing to do. That's a these are all passion projects. So then, you know, salute to anyone who does it.
And Sasha, do you want to weigh in?
So many things.
She knows what I'm talking about.
For those who don't know,
anyone who spend any time in Pakistan knows. Shahjahan knows.
Natasha was the general manager for Coke Studio season 10. So yeah, chime in, please, and tell us your thoughts.
How many years? Were you 1 year, 2 years?
One year. Oh, one year.
So you saw a little bit of the inner working.
I got in and out. it was quite an experience. Like, I was 25, and I was suddenly, like, working in the biggest place I could be working in music in Pakistan. And I was working with Strings, which was a great learning experience as well. But, like, I feel like Momo's right. Like, I had when I was joining Coke, I was like, I'm going to destroy this machine from the inside. I'm going to
I remember all your youthful energy and your optimism and enthusiasm.
I will watch this crumble. Like, I had plans, right? But
welcome to the machine.
Yeah, I was the machine. I wasn't even part of it. I was the machine. But in just being in that position, what I realized was my anger towards Coke Studio, to the point where it was because it had monopolized the entire music industry, and in doing so had cannibalized it. I felt like I was blaming that purely on Coke Studio itself as an entity, when really the problem comes with the fact that relying on a brand to make a music show is a really tricky thing to do, right? Because that is where Shuru Shuru Mein the brand will not care. Right, which is why in the initial stages it's great and fluffy
people
and something, right? And then as it grows, it's like, okay, but how do we sell more of our product through this? That is the end goal ultimately.
Then it became formulas, and how do we get maximize the viewership?
And so, like, I felt so bad for all the producers and musicians who would have to listen to, like, a lot of, like, naysaying and things like that, because I was like, yeah, but this is not. And I was one of those people who were like, boo, you know. But after having seen what was happening and sitting in on meetings and just hearing things, it became increasingly important for my perspective to shift to, okay, Coke Studio isn't the devil. You just need to create enough versions of Coke Studio that cater to everyone, because that is what an ecosystem looks like. That is what a musical landscape looks like, right? And that would require more brands to come in and start doing more work, which is great that Nescafe and Pepsi were also coming in. Because again, it keeps everyone on their toes as well. It doesn't allow for a brand team to also get lazy, we are reigning champions, right? And to also, like, I think, like, if any brand is listening, please trust the producer you have given.
Oh, God.
That is why you have hired them. If it is to be a corporate show, I'm old enough to realize that, fine, that is where the money needs to come in, no worries.
But the world least, would change if that would happen. Yeah. If the corporate people would just let the creative people do their job. We let the corporate people do their job. We're like, okay, you know, give us some money and we'll do it. Just let us do our thing.
Like, I think
just fund it.
In that perspective,
that's never going to happen.
And like, I was angry at Coke for not featuring a lot of artists that I felt like they, and everyone has a list of artists or their friends that they think deserve to be on Coke. Yeah. And at the end of the day, the idea is that there needs to be enough platforms that exist.
Exactly.
To, like, imagine if and everywhere in the world had one record label. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there was, and that's what it's essentially in Pakistan's music industry is. The Coke Studio is a record label that wakes up once a year and then hibernates and then goes back, which is what the festival does as well, like LMM does as well. So, right, you know, so all of these things are like little bursts of that environment, that energy, that musical, you know, milieu that you can exist in and everything. But again, more corporate shows or more labels, even that's the best situation. So if anyone wants to invest in starting a label in Pakistan, like something that works for the local community as opposed to copy pasting a model that works in the UK or America and working it here, that
I don't think labels are working anywhere though. I think the whole thing has changed.
I think everyone's kind of moving away from labels overall.
But we're all trying to figure out how to do it. I don't think anyone knows right now.
I still feel like there needs to be some version of a label. You're absolutely right, not the old version of a label, but somebody who like helps the musician either with getting money to fund their album, you know, these little like middleman things.
Does Pakistan have, do you guys do you have booking agents and touring companies, right? There's nothing like that.
We have managers that are usually friends of the artist, and then that's the life.
The brother or the sister is your manager. Because who else in the
family?
You can't try,
keep
you know,
it in the family.
Keep it in the family. It's like, this is my cousin, he's my manager.
Yeah,
it's like that in the acting scene as well. And then it's interesting because, like, even in the United States, where we have, like, I'm an actor. So Sean Jahan, what's up?
Actor. Yeah, man.
What's up? But we got even here, like, a lot of my representation. Like, yeah, you have like a more, you have managers and agents that actually like find you stuff and whatnot. But still, like, a lot of the stuff that I found, I've done it like on my own.
Do it.
And that's just kind of the law of the land and how it works. But
At least they're there, but like in the USA or here in the West, I'd say. I mean, it there's still the West. It's like
it's got some sort of structure. Yeah, so, no, 100%.
You know, it's defined and
the structure. I'll say this: the structure is often driven by consumption. And the thing with the West that they've done better than really anybody else is the ways that you can consume media. There's tons of ways. And I think that's really where the problem kind of, and India kind of solved it only recently. You know, India in the last 10 years has really come up with their way of consuming that has opened it to the masses, to where the guy on the street can listen just as much as the guy in the villa. And I think Pakistan is starting to, you know, you're seeing the tech boom in Islamabad and Pindi and how they're really solving these kinds of problems. And I think that will look, Macklemore didn't have like crazy booking agents and amazing amounts of money. He was a guy in his basement who used Spotify as his
infrastructure.
Platform.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't have that.
PayPal would help, you know, but
we don't have Spotify
it's all driven by consumption. It's all when you have an end consumer is kind of, sorry, this is the finance guy clearly speaking, but
he's in finance, by the way.
I will do everything in my power.
But I also think Korea is also a country that's killing it as far
the best. I am such a K-pop fan, and also like, even if you're not listening to the music, everyone should be watching the shows and watching the content that every band develops alongside their shows.
Alongside their
music, right? So they have like versions where all of the 7 band members will be chilling in like a camping setup, and people are paying to watch that and things like that. And this is all, again, not through a massive label. It's a small label that's grown and it's global. Sorry, I love BTS.
I think a lot of it, amazing. I don't think that even the West hasn't really truly figured out.
Korea's got his beat.
How to keep up with the technology, because the technology is just exponentially evolves so at such a rapid rate. The laws haven't kept up. I think it's silly. I mean, I think streaming royalties are dumb. I mean, no one is buying physical copies of music anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. So trying to get a CD printed makes no sense. Yeah. So that means all of an artist, apart from like whatever, you know, live stuff. And of course, there's no live stuff happening anyways for the next, I don't know how long, but all the income that's going to be made from an artist is going to come from streaming at this point, YouTube and your Instagram hits or whatever you're going to do.
Right.
So none of that has kept up with it. I mean, the laws haven't kept up with it. Because it's moving so fast. So yeah, everyone has to come on board. You need that to come from the top down, though. That government officials at some point have to say, okay, we've got a whole class of people that are doing stuff and they're not getting what they deserve. They're not getting, like, artists, mainstream artists in America are complaining about that because it hasn't kept up. You're getting a billion views on YouTube and you're barely making any money. That would have made you like the richest person on the planet, but it doesn't, there's something wrong with that. And that has to be addressed. Eventually it will be. Hopefully that somehow will trickle down to Pakistan as well. Someone in the government will be like, huh, maybe ye karna chahiye. I don't know if they have that foresight.
Maybe someone will listen to Desi Standard Time in Pakistan and hear this. Yes. We need to spread this very far spirited and wide discussion.
There's some gold nuggets here. I gotta say, for sure.
No, I mean, you guys are definitely touching on some of the issues that we kind of know existed, but obviously we're on the outside looking in. So it's really great to hear you guys talk about some of the things that are frustrating. Because look, we all, at the end of the day, we all want musicians from Pakistan to share their music, share their voice, so that we can all enjoy it and
succeed,
grow
yeah.
and learn and have their perspective as part of ours. So, man, thanks so much. It really opens my eyes for sure. I didn't even think about Coke Studio being this juggernaut, but I see the negative side as well as the positive side. So,
there were so many people angry at us. I would go places and people would be like, why did you do this? I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. I
just played the guitar, man, leave me alone, man.
They called me at the beginning of the year. I just show up and I don't agree with all of the things that happened. It's just, you know, I mean, I wish I had that power to change things, but you know, it's not and it's not under the thing, it's not under one person's, like, not one person. You can't just say, go, this guy is responsible for the way it's turning out.
Natasha would have already changed
Natasha
it,
would have murdered him. I know.
Yeah. Natasha was, she tried. She was the subversive. I remember.
And now we have proof of conspiracy. Excellent.
She was awesome.
Spit and vinegar when she first came in, and then by the end of it, she was like commiserating. She's like, "All right, okay, I get it. I know what went on with the situation." It really is, because I've seen so many artists who for the longest time they hadn't come on Coke Studio or whatever. So, and they were always like, "Yeah, what is this? And we could do this like this. And why haven't we done this?" And then they come on Coke Studio a couple of times, and then their tone definitely changes a little bit. They're like, "Oh man, it's kind of tough to get that." Yeah, it's like, okay, it's 30 songs, and I've railed against this. I was like, why do we have to do 30 songs? It's a ridiculous amount to try and do in 4 months. That's like 3 albums worth of stuff that we have to do. Why?
Right, right.
Why not focus on each?
Welcome to the corporate machine.
That was a joke. That was a complete joke. I'm sorry. That was a complete joke. I get your point.
The musicians would revolt if they were told at the beginning of the we have to do 50 songs.
Oh my God.
They'd just be like, "We're gonna kill all of you." How about we kill all of you? How was that? How'd you like?
Where are the extra guitar strings?
Well, on that very uplifting note. Once again, thank you guys so much. This has been more than we can ask for, and so freaking fun chatting with you guys and having this type of banter back and forth about old things music. But before we go, why don't each one of you guys give us a Q&A as to what you guys are up to right now and where people can follow you.
Natasha, you can go first.
Go first.
Yeah, Natasha, please.
Great. Put it all on me. So these days I am working on my next album, which is called Ronak. And there's a whole story with that that will come out when it needs to.
Excellent choice.
Yes, it is. I mean, I had an Urdu word for my English EP everyone on their toes. So on that, I have a couple of singles coming out over the next couple of months, hopefully. I'm also working on Pechkash, which is, again, a research hub for 20th century Pakistani music and just audiovisual material in general. And I'm just running that for funds with a friend of mine and just trying to get that done. So if anyone's interested in researching or writing about Pakistani music or has old cassettes that they want to send over my way so I can digitize them, send them over. That would be cool. And I'm on all the social medias. I've got it everywhere. My name is Natasha Nurani.
We'll definitely link you guys. Don't worry.
Absolutely.
100%. We're going to link you guys.
Thank you so much.
Momo, Shaja, what are you doing?
No. What am I doing, man? I moved here and I left all my studio stuff in Pakistan. So now it was a slow build up back to trying to get. I've got like new software and new everything. I don't know how any of it works. So I'm trying to figure all of it out. So you know, music's gonna happen, but it's definitely. Moving to America was partly because, you know, I needed to kind of get out of the Pakistani music scene. I felt like I was like, okay, I've been here. No, I was there for quite a bit, and I felt like, okay, I need to. It's going to be there. Music's going to be there. You know, I'm really into country music right now. So no, I want to find a country.
Sounds amazing. Do it.
I want to find from Georgia. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I want to find a couple of guys who play a little country style and kind of get into that thing, and you know, live kind of grow into my Texas roots now. And so the music will still keep happening, and then I'm giving lessons. That's one thing in this COVID infested region where we can't really go out and play shows anymore. So I found that I'd hook up a webcam and start playing guitar, and then a couple of people were like, well, hey, can you just, you know, Zoom and teach us a little bit? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. So that's awesome. Something that I'm doing from the comfort of my own home as well. So anyone who is looking into, you know, production, songwriting, whatever you guys want, I can assist you with.
Awesome.
Lovely. I like your Coke shirt, by the way.
Yeah, I wore my Coke shirt.
I have the same one. I'm kind of sad I didn't just choose to wear it for this.
Done it.
Yeah, I don't have a Coke.
I'm expecting a paycheck.
Ah, Babu. That's
Babu. Rahil, come on.
That's a Babu, right? Babu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shahjahan,
peace.
Okay, yeah.
What's happening? When is it coming?
Yes.
I don't know. So we.
When is the Comina's comeback?
I need to be a part of a mosh pit soon, please.
I would like to be an honorary member, dude. I would like to play some guitar solo or something. Yeah.
Are you kidding? So me and Momo technically have a collaboration happening somewhere.
We do.
Oh.
So, well, we have a demo that we did.
We have a demo, but we'll talk about that later.
That's cool.
But so yeah, Comina's. I mean, we always joke that we're done, but we never are done.
It's never over, man.
Yeah, we did a couple of COVID. So we did like a virtual festival this year in London, meaning we all recorded the parts separate, you know, all the shit you have to do. So I'm in Boston. The other two guys are in Brooklyn in New York, and one guy's in Toronto. So it's extra hard to like actually get together physically in the same space right now. But
like
we're
a
definitely
toxic long distance relationship, and you're like, exactly. y'all hate each other, but you keep getting back together again, and you're like, oh my god, why are we doing this? But I know
for the music.
Oh my god, yeah. So we have.
I love that they have a group chat that they passively aggressively talk to each other on too. It's great.
Yes.
if you write one,
I hate you, but I love
you. And then
I
nobody
you.
Responds. You're just like, oh my
so
god,
much.
I know he read.
Are you guys down for a phone call later? Likes the comment.
Seen,
but yeah,
but
we
no
have
reply. Everyone sees it, but no, they don't reply.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the worst.
It is. Totally.
What's going on?
No
but, so yeah, we have. We released the last like music we put out. I think was an EP we put out a couple years ago. There's actually four songs on there that we never put out, which are. I think we're about to start mixing those, and then I think next month we're getting together all to jam for the first time in God knows how long. And then I also have some other music. Nice. Actually, the cool thing about Corona, didn't want to say that.
Such a
Not at all what I meant to say. Quarantine. The fortunate thing about living in this digital age in quarantine is that I was able to get to a lot of these collaborations, like stuff with Momo and stuff. But yeah. So I have this other band called John the Sequence with a friend in New Mexico and another one who's in the Bay Area. And we recorded two or three songs, one of which was accepted into this really cool online digital exhibit at the Shangri-La Museum of Islamic Art in Hawaii, in Honolulu.
That's awesome.
That's a project I'm really, really excited about because it was the first.
So they're all like Pakistanis. Is that Pakistani?
No, hashtag, well, so
I didn't know that existed.
Say again.
It's a hashtag. Yeah. I never didn't know that was a thing, but wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was 2 years old when I found that out.
I was 2 years old. I don't know if there's any.
The other one's in Doha? There's the Islamic Museum of Art in Doha.
Okay, oh, wow. So yeah, I think there's one of only two.
Middle East boys, we know. You know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. One in Doha and one in Hawaii?
Honolulu, yeah. So
Hawaii.
Was the criterion?
That is great.
So I think so the person who founded it, her name was Doris Duke. She was very like, Muslim. I don't know if she was, I'm assuming she was more than just like a white lady who was into like Islamic stuff, I'm hoping. But so she, but through her like charitable
Islamic fetish,
I don't know. But it seems like a really cool. No, the people that work there are amazing, and I obviously in a normal circumstance we would have all gotten to go there. So they picked like 20 artists from all over the place, and so one of our songs got in.
That's
that.
Awesome.
So yeah, there's that, and then I'm also doing a lot of theater. I did some Zoom theater, you know, whatever.
I've done that too.
Yeah, and then this summer I was.
What is Zoom theater?
What we're doing right now, but imagine we're all actors in a play, and
it was cool as hell. So I just finished this show.
That's how cool.
I just finished this show called Guards at the Dodge. It's a show. I'll send it to you guys. You can watch the recording. It was really cool. We worked with like a projection designer and did all sorts of cool shit. And I do voiceover. That's my other thing. So I was inadvertently the star of a show that I thought was not going to do anything, but it's the 6-episode rom-com podcast. It's ridiculous. I've
seen that. It's a podcast?
Rom-com? Yeah, it's literally called Rom-Com Pods, and I was the love interest.
Yeah, you were. You got that voice.
I'm doing some things. Also, just trying not to be depressed, man. It's a rough time. You know,
the intro to the podcast. So the good thing about Corona is, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness,
always
I think
on the bright side of life. That's
yeah.
That's,
it's been tough. I think you know all of this just like as someone who I have struggled with mental health stuff my whole life, but just like the ins and outs of like whatever is happening in the world right now is like a whole other. Thing. So I'm just trying to push myself.
The last 12, 15 years, I was in front of an audience playing guitar consistently. And, you know, no matter what was happening in my life, that was kind of the baseline happy moment.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden for 6 months, it was gone. And I was addicted to that feeling of playing in front of people.
Yeah.
And getting that response and not getting that adrenaline rush and not getting those positive things that happen, it the lack of it was depressing, man.
And you don't want to admit it, honestly, for me.
I'm a junkie for live performance, man. I'm a junkie. Whether it's watching it or doing it, that kind of rush that and as human beings, I think we're all kind of having to deal with it, but
you got to find some sort of like Zoom online virtual
Zoom concert
and meeting, because even when I did that Zoom theater, I felt so good after. I was like, oh, yeah, I still got like a cool
getting on. I was doing the. I think I'm gonna start it up again now that I got my setup a little bit. But yeah, just getting on live and playing. My goal was let's just get on live and start playing. Start doing something fixed or something, but
and then just have all the like random people trying to get you to play like a solo or whatever.
But yeah, play sayoni. That's usually like all like play sayoni, and I'm like play more. They were like play pahiliya ka riff. That's like I can't just play that one riff for an hour. For an hour, I'm not just gonna play that one riff. Right?
Meanwhile, I was like, yo, play Happy Birthday.
Happy Birthday, yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
All right, guys. thank you so much for coming on here. We learned, I know I learned a ton, and a lot. Honestly, your insights are just incredible. I think for both me and Maz, like we're both kind of like these weirdly fobby but not fobby coconuts at the same, like
kind
of all these things at all at once. And you know, honestly, it's great to hear from you guys and kind of get your perspective on what the Pakistani music scene is, where it's been and where it's kind of headed, and what the problems are and how we can kind of fix them. And I think these kind of conversations are how things kind of start moving in the right direction. So thank you so much for coming on and giving us these insights.
It was fun, guys. I want to just do this regularly and talk and hang out.
Let's do it.
I think we could, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on something.
We got that group chat too, so I think we, you know.
But we're calling that show Momos with Momo. We're 100% calling it that show Momos with Momo.
There's a great Momo place around the corner.
I can steal my daughter's iPad and just get on.
Everyone find a Momo place. We're all ordering Momos and we're doing the show called Momo.
We're going to be reporting from there as well. Yes.
Momo's doing the Momo. We're doing it.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Cheers, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.